Chapter 3 Homeward Bound. While we counted down the days until we could bring Marley home, I belatedly began reading up on Labrador retrievers. I say belatedly because virtually everything I read gave the same strong advice. Before buying a dog, make sure you thoroughly research the breed so you know what you're getting into. Oops. An apartment dweller, for instance, probably wouldn't do well with a St. Bernard. A family with young children might want to avoid the sometimes unpredictable Chow Chow. A couch potato looking for a lapdog to idle the hours away in front of the television would likely be driven insane by a border collie, which needs to run and work to be happy. I was embarrassed to admit that Jenny and I had done almost no research before settling on a Labrador Retriever. We chose the breed on one criterion alone, curb appeal. We often had admired them with their owners down on the Intracoastal Waterway bike trail, big, dopey, playful galumphs that seemed to love life with a passion not often seen in this world. Even more embarrassing, our decision was influenced not by the Complete Dog Book, the Bible of Dog Breeds published by the American Kennel Club, or by any other reputable guide. It was influenced by The Far Side by Gary Larson. We were huge fans of the cartoon. Larson filled his panels with witty, urbane labs doing and saying the darndest things. Labs were immensely amusing animals, at least in Larson's hands. And who couldn't use a little more amusement in life? We were sold. Now, as I pored through more serious works on the Labrador Retriever, I was relieved that the literature was filled with glowing testimonials about the Labrador Retriever's loving, even-keeled personality, its gentleness with children, its lack of aggression, and its desire to please. All this boded well for a pet in a home that would sooner or later likely include children. Quite by accident, we had stumbled upon a breed America could not get enough of. All those happy dog owners couldn't be wrong, could they? And yet the literature was filled with ominous caveats. Labs were bred as working dogs intended to have boundless energy. They were highly social and did not do well left alone for long periods. They could be thick-skulled and difficult to train. They needed rigorous daily exercise or they could become destructive. Some were wildly excitable and hard for even experienced dog handlers to control. They had what could seem like eternal puppyhood, stretching 3 years or more. The long, exuberant adolescence required extra patience from owners. And then I came across the sentence that struck fear in my heart. The parents may be one of the best indications of the future temperament of your new puppy. A surprising amount of behavior is inherited. My mind flashed back to the frothing, mud-caked banshee that came charging out of the woods the night we picked out our puppy. The book counseled to insist, whenever possible, on seeing both the dam and the sire. My mind flashed back again, this time to the breeder's ever-so-slight hesitation when I asked where the father was. "Oh, he's around here somewhere." And then the way she quickly changed the topic. It was all making sense. I said a silent prayer that Marley had inherited his mother's disposition. A week before we were to bring our dog home, Jenny's sister Susan called from Boston. She, her husband, and their two children planned to be at Disney World the following week. Would Jenny like to drive up and spend a few days with them? A doting aunt who looked for any opportunity to bond with her niece and nephew, Jenny was dying to go. But she was torn. "I won't be here to bring little Marley home," she said. "You go," I told her. "I'll get the dog and have him all settled in and waiting for you when you get back." I tried to sound nonchalant, but secretly I was overjoyed at the prospect of having the new puppy all to myself for a few days of uninterrupted male bonding. He was to be our joint project, both of ours equally. But I never believed a dog could answer to two masters, and if there could be only one alpha leader in the household hierarchy, I wanted it to be me. This little 3-day run would give me a head start. A week later, Jenny left for Orlando. That evening after work, a Friday, I returned to the breeder's house to fetch the new addition to our lives. When Lori brought my new dog out from the back of the house, I gasped audibly. The tiny, fuzzy puppy we had picked out 3 weeks earlier had more than doubled in size. He came barreling at me and ran headfirst into my ankles, collapsing in a pile at my feet and rolling onto his back, paws in the air, in what I could only hope was a sign of supplication. Lori must have sensed my shock. "He's a growing boy, isn't he?" she said cheerily. "You should see him pack away the puppy chow." I leaned down, rubbed his belly, and said, "Ready to go home, Marley?" It was my first time using his new name for real, and it felt right. In the car, I used beach towels to fashion a cozy nest for him on the passenger seat and set him down in it. But I was barely out of the driveway when he belly crawled in my direction, whimpering as he advanced. At the center console, he wiggled and rocked and swayed, but he was grounded like a freighter on a sandbar, hind legs hanging over the passenger side of the console and front legs hanging over the driver's side. In the middle, his stomach was firmly beached on the emergency brake. Slowly, he began working his hindquarters into the air, his butt rising up, 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 tail furiously going, until the law of gravity finally kicked in. He slalomed headfirst down the other side of the console, somersaulting onto the floor at my feet and flipping onto his back. From there, it was a quick, easy scramble up into my lap. Man, was he happy. Desperately happy. He quaked with joy as he burrowed his head into my stomach, his tail slapping the steering wheel like the needle on a metronome. When we got home, I let him inside and unhooked his leash. He began sniffing and didn't stop until he had sniffed every square inch of the place. Then he sat back on his haunches and looked up at me with cocked head as if to say, "Great digs, but where are my brothers and sisters?" The reality of his new life did not fully set in until bedtime. Before leaving to get him, I had set up his sleeping quarters in the one-car garage attached to the side of our house. We never parked there, using it as a storage and utility room. The washer and dryer were out there, along with our ironing board. The room was dry and comfortable, and with its concrete floor and walls, it was virtually indestructible. "Marley, this is your room." I had scattered chew toys around, laid newspapers down in the middle of the floor, filled a bowl with water, and made a bed out of a cardboard box lined with an old bedspread. "And here is where you'll be sleeping." I lowered him into the box. He was used to such accommodations, but had always shared them with his siblings. Now he paced the perimeter of the box and looked forlornly up at me. As a test, I stepped back into the house and closed the door. I stood and listened. At first, nothing. Then a slight, barely audible whimper. And then, full-fledged crying. It sounded like someone was in there torturing him. I opened the door, and as soon as he saw me, he stopped. I reached in and pet him for a couple of minutes, then left again. We repeated the exercise several times, all with the same result. I was tired and decided it was time for him to cry himself to sleep. I left the garage light on for him, closed the door, walked to the opposite side of the house, and crawled into bed. The concrete walls did little to muffle his pitiful cries. I lay there, trying to ignore them, figuring any minute now he would give up and go to sleep. The crying continued. Even after I wrapped my pillow around my head, I could still hear it. I thought of him out there alone for the first time in his life. His mother was missing in action, and so were all his siblings. The poor little thing. How would I like it? I hung on for another half hour before getting up and going to him. As soon as he spotted me, his face brightened and his tail began to beat the side of the box. It was as if he were saying, "Come on, hop in. There's plenty of room." Instead, I lifted the box with him in it and carried it into my bedroom, where I placed it on the floor, tight against the side of the bed. I lay down on the very edge of the mattress, my arm dangling into the box. There, my hand resting on his side, feeling his ribcage rise and fall with his every breath, we both drifted off to sleep.